Hello and welcome to the NHA Podcast, Season 7, Episode 12. I am a Hybrid Mink. In the room tonight, we have Dr. Kev.
Good evening.
UMR Guy.
Hey.
And Requiem.
Good afternoon, Japanese animation enthusiasts.
Wow, Japanimation, I think, is what we call it. It's like the modern term. Let's get it right. So we're going to talk about anime again. I don't know if you guys were prepared, but I hope you're watching some stuff.
Again? Oh, come on, man. We did that last time.
We were going to talk about the news, but instead we're going to talk about anime this time. News isn't exciting. Anyways, moving on from that. Housekeeping first, then we'll talk about new season stuff. We're right, moving right along, about fastly approaching the halfway point of the new season already. And we got some news, and then this week's topic is going to be a little different. We're going to try something new. But, yeah, we'll leave it at that, and we'll tell you later. So, starting with housekeeping, Dr. Kev, what is going on the blog?
Okay, so our website is medium.com/anite-official or anite.org. And we've got only really a couple of things since the last podcast was recorded. So there's fellow writer Stino Les has done a seasonal roundup of all of the shows he watched back in spring of 2022. I think it's something like 17 shows that he's watched. Some of them look absolutely awful, but he has picked some pretty decent ones as well. So go check that out. And I've got one article, which is about the music of Monogatari's final season, because I've looked at all of the Monogatari shows. Like, it's taken me 3 years to do it. Some of the music is really, really good, and I think the final season possibly has the best music. So go check that out. It's got links to all of the relevant YouTube videos. And that's pretty much all we've got on the site at the moment.
It's all about the podcast. You don't need to read anything.
Yeah.
I am curious about Monogatari. Is it like just the scores or like the intros and endings and everything?
The intros and the endings specifically. So in total, over all three seasons, there's almost 40 of them. It's crazy.
I think I'm still partial to the very first one by Supercell.
Okay.
I think it was the ending, first ending.
Yeah, that's right. They did the first ending. I can't remember what it's called right now, but you're right. Yeah.
I think it's just a Japanese title that I definitely will not be able to repeat.
Okay. It was good.
All right, so if you like reading, there's a few things there for you. And what? So do we have the collab, like our recommendations coming soon? Do we know?
So
the
should be. So there's...
We haven't done voting for it yet.
Did I miss the voting? I'm just a little worried.
No, the voting hasn't happened yet. So you're looking at like 3 weeks from now, maybe.
But the sequel guide should be up very shortly, which is run very late this season. We would normally get it done just before the season's about to start. For whatever reason, it's been delayed. So by the time you're listening to this podcast, there probably will be the sequel guide posted. You can read that.
There are a lot of them this season, so.
It's quite a few, yeah.
Let's talk about some of them. Let's see. What did we talk about last time? What could we jump in this time? I think I'm going to try a few shows that we haven't heard about yet. Let's start with Requiem. How about will Ayumu make his move?
Yeah, so I don't know. I think it's from the same guy who did Teasing Master Takagi-san and In the Heart of Kunoichi Tsubasa, because it has that same small girl, giant forehead aesthetic. But it's also kind of like a low-key shogi based Kaguya-sama, because there's this, the main conflict is like there's a shogi club, it's only got two members, senpai and her kohai, who's got a crush on her but won't admit it. He won't admit it until he can beat her in shogi, and so far he can't beat her in shogi. But other than actually saying I have a crush on you, he basically already acts like her boyfriend, and it's really funny. So it's just this really low key, low stakes rom com that's really just really cute. That's really what it is. I've been enjoying it. They play shogi all the time, but they don't actually have any discussions about shogi, which I was kind of hoping to be a little bit more about the game in there. But it's mostly just an excuse for these two to like rom-com around each other, and for him to say things to her that are embarrassing, like you're really cute. And she turns around and goes, you have a crush on me, don't you? And he goes, no, what are you talking about? Where'd you get that impression? You want to share an umbrella?
So typical.
So it doesn't matter if you know nothing about Shogi.
Oh, no, that's no, but, yeah. The Shogi is just an excuse for him to, he doesn't even like Shogi. Oh. He used to play Kendo. He was a Kendo expert. And they're all of his friends from middle school are like, why the hell are you doing Shogi now? But it's pretty obvious he does Shogi because he wants to be with his, you know, girl.
Okay.
But for some reason, like, he can't, like, give him, he can't allow himself to actually tell her, like, that he likes her officially, even though she is quite aware of it. Until he beats her, and he can't beat her, so they're just kind of stuck. But it's pretty funny.
That is interesting. She's aware that he likes her.
She is extremely aware of it. Yeah, I mean, he doesn't exactly hide it most of the rest of the time. Like I said, like he tells her she's cute. He like offers to share an umbrella. He goes, "I want to make you happy," but he won't actually say, "I have a crush on you," because he hasn't beaten her in Shogi yet. And he also completely deadpans everything, so it's really funny. It kind of reminds me a little bit of a Heron-san from last season, where it's just this the character just says stuff with no emotion and it makes it funny.
All right. Yeah, I'm hearing, like, on paper, it seems like Marge comes in like a lion mixed with Kaguya-sama, but, like, the tone and pacing and information on Shogi is just completely absent, so I guess...
Well, yeah, it's not... It's a lot... There's no drama in the shows. It's a much more breezy kind of slice-of-life rom-com. Mm. You know, if stuff like Kaguya-sama is too overwrought for you, or March comes a lion, if you're able to perceive that it sucks.
All right, well, we're not going to talk about it.
Because it does.
But you're wrong. You're a monster. All right, this seems like a nice place of life comedy. Will Ayumu make his move? I'm guessing the final episode, maybe?
Maybe. I mean,
the manga is irrelevant, so we can't.
The manga is ongoing, so I'd be very surprised if that actually happened.
Chapter 2, he totally made his move. Or when the fuck's he making his move?
If he made his move in like episode 5, I'd be like, oh, okay, well, full points.
Ayumu will make his move halfway through the series. Just keep watching. Decent.
Oh.
All right, what else? I don't care about the show, but I want to hear about it because people still seem to like it. Dr. Kev, tell me about Danmachi season 4.
So there's only been one episode so far. They did a recap, which is quite handy because, to be honest, I've forgotten almost everything about that show. But the first episode's very much set up for the grand new adventure where the Hestia Familia, so all the main characters, and a bunch of their friends and supporting characters are all going to go delve into the big dungeon deeper than they ever have before. And it's, yeah, but the setup's good. I love this show, even if I can't even remember who most of the characters are. It's just really good old style fantasy. They're just going off on an adventure into the unknown, and I just snort that stuff like crack. So, yeah. It's good.
It's an expression, everybody. Don't worry, he doesn't really do that.
No. But, yeah, I don't know. Do any of you guys watch this show?
I love Danmachi. But my wife has declared it our show, so not able to watch the season yet.
Well, it's only just started, so there's time.
Yeah, I got to watch through season 2, and then I just kind of got burned out. So maybe at some point get back into it.
Yes, so season 3 was outstanding.
Yes, fantastic.
That's what they tell me. It was just.
And season 4 is apparently going to be 22 episodes long, something like that. So presumably it's quite a meaty story.
Yeah, I mean, Danmachi is one of the only anime I buy on physical anymore. So I've got all 3 seasons and Sword of Oratoria and the movie all up on my shelf.
Damn. I would buy them, but they're so expensive in the UK. They're like really, really pricey.
And I bought them all off one of the Sentai sales at different times.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've got like the first season OVA and the movie, I think. The others hadn't quite come down in price enough to where I wanted to get anything yet. The other problem is the season 2 OVA was so bad it, you know, sunk the rest of the thing for me.
It was hilarious. Is that the one where they were all mind controlled on a beach or something?
Yeah. That was so bad.
The OVAs are just excuses for fan service.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're funny though.
Yeah.
That reminds me, I recently watched the Kaguya OVA and it was like making fun of the fact that the OVAs are fan service. Like it was just ridiculously over the top. Did any of you guys see the Kaguya OVA?
No.
What a shame I missed that.
There's like some really good bits where it's just like they find a porn mag and they're like, oh yeah, this is awful. We gotta like take care of this, and they're just like turning the pages with a twig, and then later on they're just showing the main characters just like freaking. They never do this normally in Kaguya. Just like the boobs bouncing around, they're swimming around, just like close shots of butts, and I'm like, what is going on? And I'm like, oh, they're like making fun of it, but they're also totally just doing it anyways.
Is that on Crunchyroll, or do you have to access that via other means?
I could assume it's on Crunchyroll. There's no way I could tell you otherwise without Googling it.
Must go look that up as soon as we finish recording.
I'll get my helicopter one of these days. I'm taking my trip to Japan. So yeah, that was Danmachi season 4. We only got one episode, but I'm pretty sure we'll come up again because everybody seems to like it. I think I want to hear from UMR guy about Yakuza's Guide to Babysitting.
Yeah. So I've seen the first couple episodes, a little behind, but it's definitely got the nice kind of, you know, building a family, expanding a family kind of storyline that I like. Probably going to wind up rewatching it when my wife gets back, because I suspect it's going to be something she'll get a kick out of too. You know, same kind of sort of a, not quite a similar vibe as Spy Family, but, you know, sort of in that same thing where you've got action stuff and then, you know, you got the "Daw, that was so sweet" kind of stuff. But I'm loving it. The Yakuza boss's daughter is like his, not to get too far into it because it's revealed fairly early, but his wife is basically in a coma or something in the hospital. So he's been raising, you know, this young daughter on his own, and he winds up having one of his subordinates, you know, help her out and help watch over her. And of course their relationship is growing and it's changing, you know, him a little bit and stuff like that. And so it's a really good story so far, actually.
So the subordinate's probably just kind of an asshole and he's gradually becoming a little softer. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know if he's an asshole. His nickname is the Demon because he's, you know, the terror. Yeah, and
yeah, he's not an asshole. He's reckless and violent. So his boss is hoping that helping raise the daughter will give him a sense of responsibility to have him calm down a little bit. But he's not an asshole. He's a pretty decent guy right off the bat.
Yeah, definitely.
This isn't the house sitting one that was on Netflix, right? This is a different.
No, that was Way of the House Husband.
Yes. All right. Good.
This is a similar idea, but you know he's still in the Yakuza, and like it's one of those shows where they're in the Yakuza, but they kind of just work around the criminal elements of it.
Every Yakuza member has a heart of gold. I've been taught that from anime and video games. So,
yep.
Honestly, the show's really adorable. Like the girl, the little girl is super cute. So the relationship with like him and you know, all of that stuff is him and his you know, junior in the Yakuza and the little girl. And everybody's really cute. It's just, it's one of those shows that makes you like, ah, that was fun. And then you move on. It's not going to shake the earth. It's not going to be one of those shows where I don't think anyone's ever going to go, Yakuza's Guide to Babysitting is my favorite anime, but it's a good time to watch, you know?
Yeah, that's definitely.
More like a slice of life than like the over the top stuff that we'd see, you're saying?
Yeah, it doesn't really have like an overarching plot. It's just, you know, hey, look, isn't this little girl cute? Isn't it funny how her guardian is a Yakuza guy? You know, that kind of thing.
There's some kind of Hinamatsuri vibes with a little more on the, you know, Daw family good side than sort of the, you know, extra goofy comedy of Hinamatsuri, but very, very similar vibes.
Mm-hmm. All right. Sounds pretty good. That was Yakuza's Guide to Babysitting. I think I'm going to talk about Isekai of G-san. Hypothetically, if I were ever to be told to watch the show on a podcast, I probably would have tried it out, and I did. And there's like two episodes out, maybe three, but I've only seen two. Brief. You guys haven't talked about this one yet, I don't think. So I'll just give you a brief synopsis.
Yeah. I've only watched one episode of this because that's all that's legally available on Netflix.
Oh, okay. I thought it was Netflix Japan only. So we're getting it.
Yeah, it's on Netflix.
Yeah, okay. But it's about a 2-week delay.
Ah, that's what it is. So yeah, I've seen two episodes, and it carries on the same humor. They introduce the girl that was in the intro, and it's just, it's definitely my favorite comedy of the season. This season to me isn't like amazing as far as new shows are concerned. But the show I really like, basic premises, guy's in a coma for 17 years. He was isekai'd to a pretty generic isekai world, but then when he came back, he's got powers, he's got all these memories that he can show his nephew. But most importantly, he loves the Sega Saturn. And that that is my favorite part about this show, because every episode, just out of nowhere, he just like brings up these obscure references to Sega Saturn stuff. And he's like, he bought this magazine that was like, ooh, the top 200 Sega Saturn games. And he's like, oh, the number one was just some Bishoujo dating sim ported from PC. And he's like, are you going to be okay? And then he like goes outside and he's like, how is Guardian Heroes number 197? It's like, it's just like really stupid humor that I love.
Yeah, the Sega hook is the part I was most looking forward to.
I don't think he knows anything about Dreamcast yet. I really hope they bring up Dreamcast at least at some point.
Yeah, because he was isekai'd in the year 2000, and Dreamcast was, what was it, 1999,
baby?
1999. It came out, yeah, late 99. 98 yeah.
In Japan, yeah. Maybe? Or early 99. We got it 9999. So.
Yeah. Yep. I love the Dreamcast.
Yo, I just remember the podcast who's in.
I just remember, I'm there, dude. We can talk about Power Stone for 2 hours.
Oh, yeah. Shit, a lot of Power Stone.
Choo Choo Rocket.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I just always remember the marketing. It's like, Dreamcast.
It's thinking.
Yo, man. That Sonic game is unplayable now, but back then, woo, that whale. Like,
if people were like, Dreamcast, like, go online and play games through the internet. What the fuck are you talking about?
IRC chat? Sega Swirl? Dude, you didn't even know what you were missing. Mm-hmm.
I like
Space. Everyone gets.
I like Space Channel 5.
Space Channel 5, baby.
That was amazing.
Michael Jackson was in one of those.
Yeah, he was. Space Michael.
Skies of Arcadia. Skies of Arcadia, yeah. People.
Great. Mm-hmm. Too many random battles, but otherwise great RPG.
Yeah.
I say this, and people don't always believe me, and they disagree with me, but I love the Dreamcast controller. I have giant, like, catcher glove hands, and that was one of the only controllers that ever fit my hands correctly.
That D-pad will rip your fingers in half. And the cord goes down and not up, so you got to clip it. And then it fucks up the cord because it's clipped in there. I don't know, man.
I love that controller. I loved it.
Yeah.
Your thumb slips off the pad. You have, like, any kind of, like, indentation on your thumb. You're ripping those little nubbins off that thing. You're slipping and sliding all over the place.
Hey, get good.
That's a fair point. I'm sorry.
I imported so many games for the Dreamcast because it was so easy to run like imported games and copied games.
Are you talking about piracy in my podcast?
Yeah. Well, not always. I imported Ikaruga. That was a fantastic game.
Ikaruga!
Yeah.
One of the only Hummingbird based games ever made.
That was good. And Border Down, that was a good shooter.
Border Down is like $300 on eBay. I don't blame you for pirating
and
that.
And Cosmic Smash, I have an original copy of that. That was good.
All right. Your Dreamcast podcast in the future, but for now, anything more we want to say about Isekai Oji-san?
I mean, the art's horrible, but I think that's deliberate.
I don't think it's horrible. I kind of like the rough style to it.
I think it's deliberate because the flashbacks to the isekai world looks like very generic, pretty fantasy. And then the real world, everyone's like really ugly and it's all gray and it's just...
You're saying it's commentary.
Yeah.
Real world sucks. I'm like, thanks.
And the poor guy keeps on talking about how when he was isekai to this fantasy world, everyone there was beautiful, and he was considered basically to be a subspecies of orc, because he just looks like a normal human being.
Yeah, they always
they did the same thing on, what the fuck was the name of that show? Other isekai, Suki, god damn it, I can't remember. It was about the moon, where like his followers are like a giant spider lady and a giant dragon lady.
I can't remember the name. I watched that one. Tsukimichi or something like that, wasn't it?
Yeah, Tsukimichi. That's what it was. God, I actually really liked that show. But like, because he, like, the goddess of the world he got isekai to is like the goddess of beauty. All of the humans are ridiculously good looking, and they all think he's like a horrible troll when he's just like a normal looking guy. He has to wear a mask. I love that gimmick.
And the other gimmick to the show is that he's just totally oblivious to the tropes of isekai, so like he doesn't really know what a tsundere is. And then in the second episode, well, not much of a spoiler, it's just one little bit. He talks about how everyone was loving Evangelion. He's like, wait a minute, does that mean he knows what a tsundere is? Because Asuka, obviously. And she does not. Like, he shows the memories of what he did, and the girl's like, I've always been sheltered, and I don't know if I should open myself up to other people. And he's like, you live the way you want to live. Shelter yourself, go deep inside, build those walls. I'm like, no, you're doing just horrible life lessons. Yeah, it's good.
It's kind of depressing. Yeah, it's still funny.
Definitely appeals if you're in your 30s, I would say. So, if you're one of us.
I used to be in my 30s.
Oh, yeah.
Then I took an arrow to the knee.
All right, we're definitely moving on from that. I want to talk about Shadow South Season 2. Let's ask Dr. Kev.
Woo! I love this show so much. It's just great. I'm so glad that they made a second season, and they've managed to even whitewash over some of the narrative decisions they made in the anime original ending of the first season. You could just kind of cut out the last three or four episodes of season one and just go straight into season two, and it would be fine.
It made it confusing at the very first episode. I'm like, wait, is this where we left off? I'm a little, what's going on now?
They kind of gently fudged it a little bit.
Yeah, they did a Blue Exorcist, and they're just like, no, those episodes didn't happen. Mm-hmm.
More or less. I think they vaguely mention them. Oh, yeah, this sort of happened, but it doesn't really matter anymore. But it's really good, and it's creepy. It gets even more creepy as it goes on. Like, there's these poor children who are basically brainwashed into being slaves to these shadow people, and they give them this creepy mind-controlling coffee thing, which is clearly, like, an addictive drug. And, like, they have these, what do they call it? Celebration parties or something, like, I can't remember, something like that, and it's really, they just get a sip of this coffee and it makes their eyes go all scribbly, like something from Rick and Morty, and it's like, ugh.
And then they have like these little shadow creatures that jump in their mouths.
Yeah,
have teachers,
yeah, like, the scorches.
Yes,
that's some alien facehugger shit right there.
But it's quite funny. There's like slapstick humor and stuff there. It's got such a strange tone that kind of jumps all over the place from really sweet and cute to creepy, horrifying. What the hell am I even watching? And I love it so much. And the manga's now available in English. The manga's in full color as well, which is unusual.
That's surprising.
Yeah. I think that they don't release it that often. I think it's maybe on like a monthly publishing schedule, and there's only maybe like a dozen pages each month or something, because it clearly takes a long time to draw it. But yeah, the manga's really, really good, and this has been just a fantastic adaptation, and I just hope they don't end up going the same way as they went with The Promised Neverland, because this is Cloverworks, and I hope they've learned their lesson from that.
I was definitely concerned.
Promised Neverland never had, you know, a character riding a, you know, doing rodeo on a giant experimental vacuum.
Yeah.
So that was a great episode.
Ridiculous, yes. And all over the place. And I just don't know what I'm supposed to be feeling half the time, but it was fun. So
and that's the show, though. It's like it's a sweet, you know, friendship show. Then it's a slapstick comedy. Then it's a horrible Victorian, you know, nightmare. It's fucking great.
Yeah. I mean, these children are basically enslaved, but they're having fun, you know, some of the time.
What a good time.
Yeah.
God, I love that show.
Having fun too.
The OP and the ED aren't as good as season one, but then I don't think that's because they're bad. I just think it's because the first seasons were so good.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting imagery in that opening sequence with like mirrors and things. It's very interesting.
Oh yeah, shout out to season two. We kind of spoiled it a little bit, so hopefully, if you were interested, you already started.
Yeah,
a little.
Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, we spoiled a little, but I mean, not that bad.
Yeah. I mean, we spoiled the main reveal.
But, well, yeah, but that reveal was last season. If you haven't seen it by now, what the hell are you doing?
Exactly.
So, it was it was recommended in our collaboration. Are you telling me that the people who listen to this podcast don't follow the collaboration?
I assume they all watch everything we recommend.
Yeah, right.
It's mandatory.
I don't want to talk about this next one too much, unless you guys are loving it, but I mean, it's fine. Devil of the Part-Timer came back, season two, after I don't know how many years, and I don't remember it being this ugly and, like, not as funny as before. I don't know if you guys feel the same. It doesn't seem as good.
I'd never watched it the first time around. I only just watched the first season, like, a week ago. So as far as I'm concerned, I'm just watching a continuation of the same show. I haven't really noticed much of a difference, I guess.
I haven't got a chance to watch it yet, but I have heard a few people say that, and I think it was Proton who made the point that the style, the particular style of humor of the show was a lot less common at the time their first season came out. And now there's a lot of shows with this kind of humor, so maybe it doesn't hit as well as it did the first time. But I haven't seen it yet, so I can't comment.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet. That's another waiting on family kind of thing. Everybody loves the show. But I read a number of the light novels, and some of it, I don't know if it's a matter of it starts getting more serious, or, but that's also a possibility too, if it's starting to head into some of those story arcs where, you know, it's less just a straight up, you know, goofy humor and like, hey, we actually kind of found some real plot to work with, and maybe they're starting down that road too.
It just doesn't feel to me like it is like directed in a way where it has like the, whenever it's trying to do like a quick funny gag, it like the directing doesn't seem like it's pulling it off. But otherwise, yeah, it seems more or less the same, I guess.
I've not really noticed a particular decrease in quality, but I guess I've just sort of mainlined it over the course of a few days. So maybe I'm not that objective.
Yeah, might just be
it could also be how many people, you know, have rewatched it, you know, or do people remember it as being funnier than it per se was?
Per se.
Yes. Go ahead.
No, I just, if there's an episode of South Park where like these kids end all their sentences per se, because they're goths and that's what they think they need to do. So every time anybody says per se, that's the first thing that comes to my mind. Sorry, go ahead.
That's a good point, per se, but I think we'll move on from that.
Per chance.
Let's see. Per chance is better. I will say the new season of Delman's Part-Timer has a kid.
Well, I think we all knew that. That was in all the key art and everything.
But yep. If they weren't paying attention, they wouldn't know. I'm sure she's like 1,100 years old or something. Let's see what we don't talk about. Let's talk about Licorice Recoil, because this is probably one of my favorite shows of the new season. So, UMR guy, what's up?
Yeah, no, it's definitely, just sort of a weird action show mixed with, like, you know, super Genki girl who does stuff, and I don't even know stuff. That's the most unhelpful thing ever, I realize, but
it's like Gunslinger Girl without the misery.
Yeah, I
remember reading somebody's comment that they were expecting, you know, based on the description of like, oh, you know, you got a problem that people at this cafe can help you with, and so they were expecting something, you know, like one show, and instead they got, you know, something else totally different crossed with Gunslinger Girl. And they've read that and I'm like, yeah, that was the story synopsis that you find on, say, My Anime List or wherever, just does nothing to let you know what's actually going to happen. So
this is a beautiful show.
It's fantastic.
Oh yeah, it's
absolutely gorgeous. And the character designs are lovely. The design of the clothing is great. It's just really, really good. And I like it. It's mostly just been sort of slice of life stuff, but there's clearly a bigger plot percolating in the background, because you know, every few scenes are kind of hinting that, oh, this is going on and that's going on. I imagine that will come into the foreground fairly soon. But I really like the character building stuff that they're doing with the two main girls. They're just a lot of fun to watch. It's possibly the best new show this season, I think. And although, you know, there's a lot of the new shows this season aren't that great. I think in a more stacked season, this would be kind of somewhere kind of more in the middle. But at the moment, it's not got an awful lot of competition.
Yeah, it's weird. It has like this sinister premise to it. We're like, hey, we're just controlling the media and making sure everything's great all the time. But you never really get that feeling while you're watching the show. It's like, oh, it's just kind of happy-go-lucky. We're not killing the bad guys, blah, blah, blah. Mm. So I'm waiting for that to kind of come into play.
Yeah, it's a really interesting mix of like this cute girls doing cute things, girl power, friendship show mixed with you know, urban secret agent combat. You know, it's like they took a really serious premise and were like, well, what if they didn't take it seriously, though?
Mm. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's one of those shows where there's a lot of stuff going on underneath the initial, like, surface layer of the show. And I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I will be even more generic than my poor description of it, but it does feel like there's probably a quote unquote twist coming that,
oh yeah,
you know, somewhere down the pike that's sort of being broadcast from a mile away. But
we still don't really know a lot about the blonde haired one. Like, I'm sure she had to deal with something horrible. We're going to find that out. It's like, well, why did she decide to, you know, not kill the bad guys, but she's so skilled. We'll probably figure that out at some point.
I do hope we eventually see what happened at the damn radio tower.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the most recent episode focused almost entirely on shopping for underpants, and there was not a single actual panty shot in the entire thing. It was really fun.
Yeah, that's some quality work right there.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you count boxers, there's lots of that.
I don't count boxers.
It steadfastly refused to go anywhere near the whole etchy thing. It was hilarious.
I really like how the dark-haired girl, she doesn't act in any way that I would expect her to. Like, we've seen this trope a million times where, like, they're soft-spoken, serious about their work, but she's already, like, smiling and just, like, kind of joking with her. I'm like, this is more of a natural relationship, and I appreciate it.
Mm.
Yeah, I love, I just finished episode 2, and I love how she takes, you know, the hair tie out, the rubber band, and I think she's clearly trying to hit the blonde-haired one, and the implication, at least to me, is that the blonde-haired one just, like, preternatural dodging abilities, and so she dodges, and the rubber band hits somebody else instead.
Yep. No, that's one of my favorite parts of the show, is every action sequence where she just dodges everything.
Oh yeah,
it's fucking amazing.
But I love that it's sort of like, you know, here's the rubber band, which is so perfectly, you know, adolescent girl too, as well. You know, that I'm gonna hit you with this rubber band because you're an idiot, kind of thing. You know, but nope, she dodged.
I feel bad that we don't know their names. Do we know? Do we have a guess?
Chisato is the blonde.
And Takina. It's Chisato and Takina.
That's it. Yeah. Takina is the darker. Yeah.
Yeah, but if, like, you know, if our audience, like, sees the show, they're gonna, like, the blonde one and the darker girl is going to be a lot more descriptive than Chisato and Takina, because they don't know who they are.
Sure.
Yeah. Trying to help you out, listeners.
Good excuse. let's see what we got. Let's move on. But yeah, I think we all really like Licorice Recoil. I just finished Bastard Part 1. I don't really have a lot to say about it, other than if you're okay with, like, blatant sexism and generic shonen stuff, but, like, really pretty special effects and people yelling Dark Schneider 4 times in a row. Even the guy says his name. It's too much.
Dark Schneider. I love this fucking show. I love it so much.
Oh, stupid, but I will watch season 2. I will watch part 2, whatever you want to call it.
Just give me more.
I'm still stuck on episode 6. I'm not even sure if I'm going to bother finishing.
Oh my god, I love it so much.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I feel like I'm 14 again every time I watch it.
I don't want to feel like I'm 14 again.
Oh, fuck you, I do.
Don't be bullied in school. It's just so weird. I still
don't, like, look like I'm 14 again.
Ooh, I kind of do. Some people do.
I was so cut at 14, man.
What the fuck? I don't want to picture that now.
I don't want the acne.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want the bowl haircut again.
The acne was a problem, I guess.
Speaking of the actual anime, though, there's a couple of, like, on paper, like, man, these are some badass women. Oh, man, look at that sweet armor. Oh, she's not wearing that anymore. Okay. Well, she's still real strong. Oh, he grabbed her boob. Now she's moaning in ecstasy. I'm like, I don't really need that much. You know, you could be sexy, but, like, I don't know. What's the main dark elf's name?
I forget her name. She's great, though.
The dark elf. She's so cool. I'm probably going to have to draw her at some point. But she's, like, just as powerful as Dark Schneider, but... Then, like, he's like, oh, I love you. And he's like, oh, you weaken the knees. Rick, why do you love this show?
Because it's ridiculous.
Oh, okay.
That's why I love it. Like, all this ridiculous horse shit, you know, scream, like, naming your country after Metallica and screaming your magical
Halloween!
Spells. Yeah, with the name of bands and like characters being like one letter off the names of the lead singers of heavy metal bands, and like being able to disable any female he meets by grabbing their titty.
Bastard is essentially Rex number one self-insert fantasy. This is Rex's dream.
Oh, some. I wish I could just like, you know, whenever I feel like it, change into a much younger guy with humongous abs. Where I could just bam, 8-pack, magic powers. Let's rock.
Did you watch the show with your wife, Rex?
Of course not.
It's not one of your shows then.
No. Thankfully, because then I still wouldn't have finished it.
True. All right, we don't have anything else to say about this show. It's you see a preview, you know what you're getting.
Yep.
We've heard enough about Rex. What is Dr. Kev watching that I want to hear about? Okay, so we got some other shows from previous seasons. I don't think we've mentioned Overlord Season 4 too much. Why don't you give me some info on that?
So after last season, Season 3's sort of war crimes, murdering of hundreds of thousands of people, and random slaughtering of perfectly innocent adventurers, now we're on to sort of Happy Happy Fun Times, which is just really weird, very tonally jarring. And it's still kind of interesting because your main character, Einzulgon, you know, the skeleton bone daddy guy, he's consolidating his power. He's started up this new sorcerer kingdom, which is full of undead monstrosities. And his main, I think, reason for doing that is he wants to build a center of power which will, I think, attract other people who maybe used to be in the same game that he was. He's really desperate to find other players from the MMO that he's been sort of reincarnated into. But in order to do that, he's made some really morally suspect choices. And I don't feel the show has really explored any of that at all. I mean, we have had a bit more of his sort of inner monologue, and it's still quite clear he doesn't really have much of a clue what he's doing, which sort of humanizes him a little bit, but it's still very hard to know how to feel about him. Are you meant to root for him? I don't really know. The demon girl is still hilarious. What's her name again?
Albedo.
Yeah. Oh, I love her. She's just ridiculous.
She got a kiss.
Yeah, she goes off to be an ambassador. And there's this sort of creepy noble guy keeps on touching her, and she's like, you can just see from her face, she just wants to just like detonate his brain or something, just rip out his heart and eat it. But she's uncharacteristically sort of withholding that. So it's quite good fun, but I just don't know. It's kind of also morally reprehensible. I have such mixed feelings about it. Is anybody else watching it?
I'm watching. I like it. I think it's better. Well, I like that it's focusing on him, Ainz, rather than the side characters like last season, because it did feel like that he wasn't really having a whole lot of agency, and he just seemed like, oh, he's just lost all his humanity. He's just doing all this stuff because you weren't getting the monologue, and you need the monologues to know what's going on with him. The only other tell he has is when he like kind of glows green and resets itself. And I don't really know exactly what that is. I'm still trying to figure that out. I don't know if we ever got a real confirmation on what that is.
Probably in the light novels. I don't know. No, I think
they mentioned it in the first season. It's like because he's a lich, like his emotions can only go so far before it magically resets them.
Oh, okay.
It's basically like, you know, because he's not human, it's like a lich thing.
Okay. I don't know. I mean, I know that even after this season, they're continuing it. They're doing, is it a movie or is it two movies or something for the next story arc? So, you know, it's not ending anytime soon. So I'll probably stick with it.
It's following the community rule of 4 seasons in a movie at this point.
Yeah, that was 6 seasons in a movie, but okay.
Oh, my bad. That's too many seasons. I don't know if I want that many.
Well, I mean, they did completely delete one season, so they completely retconned out one whole season. So it's really 5 seasons if you think about it.
Seasons did they retcon?
There was the one season where the lead writer left. The guy who ran the show, the guy who does Rick and Morty now, he left the show. So they ran
Community.
It.
Okay.
Yeah, Community. Yeah. But they did a whole season, then they brought him back, and they just acted like that season didn't happen, and it was all imagined because of a gas leak. So
I remember the Gas League. Yes, okay. Anyways, if you like Overlord, you're probably going to like season 4. It's off to a pretty good start.
Well, it's a lot better than season 3, at least.
Mm.
Yeah, but I mean, Lizard's fucking... That's pretty good. That seems
season
great.
Season 2, I think.
What? What happened to season 3?
Everybody died.
Yeah, season 3 is where he just started murdering people.
Yeah.
Man, I guess I blocked that out.
That's when, you remember when he lets that team of adventurers into the labyrinth and then he murders them?
Do they all die?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I forgot that. Okay.
It's hard to come back from that one.
I guess. But then again, that's like the isekai thing. Like, we're just going to commit mass murder at some point. And then, well, you still like this hero, right, guys? Slime movie coming soon.
It was not a war crime in Slime. That was a military target that was attacking him. It was completely justified.
Military attack. Is war crime. All right, anyways.
It was a legitimate attack on a legitimate target, sir.
Illegitimate. There was one good person there, and he didn't deserve to die.
Okay,
well. I mean, my Black Summoner right now.
Yeah, Black Summoner, of the isekais this year, I think, it's either this or Parallel World Pharmacy are the only ones that are really watchable. My isekai life is dull as hell, and Harem in another world is, in the labyrinth in the world, is, like, transgressive. The show is making me upset. I might even actually drop it.
Why is that?
Well, not only does Dizzy go to like the now overtrodden territory of slavery in an isekai. Because like, he bought a slave, but they didn't even like dilly-dally around it where he's actually freeing her. He's not going to treat her like a slave. Like, he went to buy a slave because he wants to fuck her. And to get the money to buy the slave, he snuck into a bandit's hideout and killed them in their sleep. And you're supposed to root for this character. I was like, this is disgusting. This is too far. So when you have that kind of shit, you know, out there, a regular, good old fashioned, well intentioned isekai like Black Summoner comes off better. Plus, it's like I really like his relationship with his summons, like the various creatures and people under his control, like talk in his head when they're not currently summoned. So it's actually pretty funny.
So it's just straight up comedy then.
Yeah, it's a regular. He's a guy. He's a guide. He's got summoning powers. He's way too overpowered. But like his relationships with his summons, like his Dark Knight and the goddess, and he bought a slave too. But at least he didn't buy her for the strict purpose of fucking her, and he didn't sell somebody else into slavery, which the main character of Harem and the Labyrinth did.
Watching this Harem and the Labyrinth.
What?
Are you still watching the Harem and the Labyrinth?
I'm not sure. After this last episode where like he literally cut people's throats in their sleep and then bought a slave, that may be too far even for me. We may have entered redo of healer territory.
That might be a recommendation for some people.
Yeah, I know. And that's what's sad. That's what's unfortunate. Like there's some people who are like, oh yeah, give me that shit. That's the shit I want. But yeah, Black Summer, I think, is actually extremely competent and very watchable. If you're an isekai person, just don't expect, you know, as we discussed in our last podcast, don't expect anything great out of it. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think I have one more show to talk about. Is there anything else you guys want to talk about before we move on to the news?
Let's talk about Dragon Quest Die.
I could talk about Dragon Quest Die. Man, that has been dragging so much, but I still enjoy it for the most part.
Well, we're in the last fight now.
The thing that I loved about Dragon Quest Die, even though it was very typical, very generic shonen, is that the characters were lovable and that we moved at a brisk pace. Things would happen. Fights would be like one or two episodes. But now it's Dragon Ball territory. It's like, oh, here's a new villain. Oh, this fight's going to be like 10 episodes. But he basically just did a Kamehameha to finish him off. Like,
yeah, basically.
So Dragon Ball.
Yeah, at least a power creep. Oh, it was always logical. Like, it always made sense where the extra power was coming
from. In the rules of this universe, yes, it was logical.
I don't know. I think we're in the end game now. And I don't know. It's one of my favorite things every week is Dragon Ball or Dragon Quest. Adventures of Die. Let's go see how he beats the shit out of somebody this week.
I do enjoy it. It's like almost a guilty pleasure. Where it's like, I probably shouldn't like this because it's so generic, but I do like the RPG references, and the fights are usually pretty good. So,
yeah, I mean,
him coming back was so dumb. Like his hair just exploding out of his head. I'm like, oh, you have mithril hair now. Okay.
I love that. I love that. It makes no sense. But him was cool. I'm glad they didn't kill off all of those characters because they were pretty great.
They just bringing everyone back. Is anyone dead? I love Crocodine. Yeah. He's just a dumb, big-ass character.
No, everybody's dead. All characters are dead. The rest of the Royal Guard are dead. The other two Dragon Masters are still dead.
For now.
Hadler's still dead.
He needs to stay dead. They can't bring him back now.
So, yeah, some characters are dead. His dad is dead.
Yeah,
that is dead.
I mean, he has to be because of, you know, the new power he got, which was spoiled for me from the video game Jump Force, which is not good, but he had the two on his hand. I'm like, what?
Wait, he's in Jump Force? Eventually.
Yeah, and he has Goku's voice because it predates the anime. It's weird.
Well, it predates this anime. There was a previous anime back in the 90s.
Right, it predates the modern Dai anime.
That's the thing is, like, yeah, it's swimming in tropes, and it's all this old school stuff, but I mean, all those tropes came from stuff like this. This is like a progenitor of this kind of style. That's why it's so, it feels so like familiar and comfortable.
Mm-hmm. And for the most part, the characters are fun to watch. So I'm still in it for the ride. It's probably done, right? It's the last core, I assume. It's got to be over.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We got to be near the end here. I just always love anything where like the most powerful spell in the world is called Kuglimmer.
Well, because like the translation, the localization is like that's how they did the RPGs. Whereas in Japanese, it's like sounds cool, but it's fine. I'm gonna use teleportation, zoom. Okay.
I have to use a zoom spell, and they just say it. It's a straight face. I'd love it. Yep. All
right. The only other show I want to talk about, and a lot of times I joke about it, but Love Live Superstar Season 2. Those characters are extremely expressive, like over the top, way different than Nijigasaki, which was the previous Love Live. And I just want to say, it's legit really good. I really like this season. I don't feel bad about watching it. What is happening?
I mean, Luigi would agree with you if he was here, if he ever came on the podcast.
My goal on the podcast is to please Luigi and nothing else. So I hope I've done that. The new season of Love Live, if you are a fan of the first season and you feel like they've made too many of these, this is the best one since the first season, I think. It's really, really fun to watch. Characters are just ridiculous and over the top and fun to watch, and the music's fine. I think the music's good. You know, it's always been pretty good. That's like the one through line, is that Love Live has pretty good music.
Well, the bastards aren't streaming it in the UK, so I can't watch it. So
not a bit.
If you're listening to this, bastards, stream it, please.
Yeah, you bastards.
We know they are.
Although, Hybrid, before we move on quickly, another thing that's not streaming but I'm breaking my usual rules for, you're watching Summertime Rendering as well.
Yeah, I'm not caught up. I'm on like episode 8, I think.
Oh, damn it, because the last episode was absolutely freaking amazing. Damn. Oh, well.
Yeah, it's really good.
We catch up with that at a different time. Episode 15 of Summertime Rendering, my god, it's the best episode of anime I've seen, I think, in years. It's so good.
That's one show that you really just can't talk about without spoiling, because like every episode's like kind of a new reveal, and they're actually pretty fun and interesting reveals, too.
So good, so good. Oh, well, anyway.
Yeah, we'll have to spoiler cast when it's done, who knows?
Mm.
Let's move on to the news, and I'm just going to go one at a time. You are our guy. What do you have for us?
Yeah. Well, I'm sure everybody here has played Detroit Become Human.
Nope.
By Quantic Dream.
No.
Yeah, no, me neither.
I played Heavy Rain, and I'm like, I don't want to play any more of these.
Yeah, I watched a Let's Play of it just because I was curious.
Yep.
But, now, the game, which is apparently about androids that everybody's starting to worry that they took our jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Androids, replacement theory.
Something else.
Yeah, it's replacement theory. We're all being replaced by androids.
Yeah. Yep. All being replaced by androids. You know, because we've never seen that in an animated before. But no, it's getting a manga spinoff, written by Kazumi Sawatari and art by Moto Sumida. It's going to be called Detroit Become Human Tokyo Stories. It will be set shockingly in Tokyo and is centered on an android who's apparently being an idol. So that's where she's got to deal with the took our jobs thing. So
they can sing better than us, so I respect it.
Yeah, this is just where VTubers are eventually heading.
Could take over the world.
Mm-hmm. And then an evil AI idol will attack Macross.
Macross did it first, right?
Yeah, Macross Plus was there years ago.
I don't think we need to be the same. But, I mean, if no one here played Detroit Become Human, I just think it's funny that they're doing this, and it's like they're very much tropey anime-ifying it. So maybe it'll be good.
I mean, it's pretty tropey to begin with. The story is... it's that same guy. It's Indigo Prophecy and Two Souls and everything. So it's this horrifically overwrought, overdramatic story. Wait, to the point where they're trying to make... It's like they take the their story beats and their themes and they beat you over the head with them like it's Babylon. And you're like, did you get the message? Are you paying attention now to our story, which is obviously about racism?
Always about racism. I want to know if this is a choose-your-own-adventure manga. Can I choose what happens?
They do? Is that a thing?
No. I want them to do it. Then I'll care. It'd be like the games.
That'd be interesting, actually. That'd be really hard to draw, though.
It'd be a lot of work. Moving on. Dr. Kev?
Okay. So this is new. Well, this news isn't brand new. This came out of Anime Expo a few weeks ago. It was about Tokyopop, which is a publisher which was pretty big in the early 2000s. And was a big part of the manga bubble burst in the sort of mid-2000s. They're still around, surprisingly. And they have announced the return of their Rising Stars of Manga contest, which you might think, well, so what? So they ran this a few times back in the 2000s, and it was for people in the West to submit. It was like an open submissions policy. You could submit your short, sort of manga-like comics for publication. Thing was, Tokyopop then snapped up all the copyright for it, didn't really pay very much, and then just profiteered off of it. And it was, they treated the creators very, 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 very badly. They did this more than once. So it's quite controversial that they have decided, for whatever reason, they're trying to get back on their feet. They've been publishing a few more books recently, that why in the hell's name would they restart this competition that got them into so much sort of bad press before. Now, they said this time that they won't actually have any ownership of the IP that's submitted, but I don't think anybody actually trusts Tokyopop to do anything non-shitty. So who knows? But the submission period starts July 25th to October 25th, so if you want Tokyopop to sell your soul for you, then you can submit some manga-esque comic art to them. So, hybrid, on you go.
Contact info, I'm interested.
I gotta admit, when I heard this, my first reaction was, Tokyopop still exists?
Yeah.
I thought they had completely collapsed.
Well, they kind of went under. Well, they didn't go completely under, so it's still owned by the same guy, the same publisher. A guy called Stu Levy runs it. For a while, they were just doing print-on-demand stuff. But now they've got quite a large sort of BL, sort of, boys love kind of range. So clearly they've tapped into that particular market. And recently they also published the, have you heard of the manga Aria, the masterpiece?
Yes, I have.
Which is just fantastic. I got that recently because it was reprinted as part of a thing from Write Stuff International. So I think there might have been a Kickstarter or something to begin with that I missed. But because all the copies were sold basically immediately, it went to a big reprint run. So I have those, and it's a beautiful manga. If Tokyopop keep printing things of that high quality, I'm happy to support that, but not if they start messing around with with people's creativity again. But, who knows?
Good luck to anyone who submits to that. So I got something here. We were talking about this earlier. Uncle from Another World, aka Isekai Oji-san, gets a triple collab with Chain Chronicle smartphone game and Sonic the Hedgehog, which makes sense because there's so much Sega in that anime.
I'm sorry, what?
Chain Chronicle smartphone game and Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah, I still don't get it. What is Chain Chronicle?
I don't know what Chain Chronicle is. I'm not gonna lie. It's probably a Sega game, I had to guess.
It's a smartphone game where you play as Sonic the Hedgehog and run into...
No, it's a triple collab. You're not understanding. It's three things. Sonic is his own thing.
Oh, shit.
So the anime contains numerous visual references to Sega properties in an amusing publicity stunt. Real world, Sega designated Oji-san the official Sega uncle last December with a certificate to prove it.
Okay.
This is important news, guys. Tokyo Pop, not important. This, keep your eyes peeled.
Official Sega uncle sounds like the one you keep your kids away from.
Yeah, seriously. This is something you say about like the member of the family that no one's allowed to invite to parties anymore. Like, no, that's the Sega uncle.
Ooh. The official Sega daddy, of course, is Segata Sanshiro, but he, rest in peace.
R.I.P.
Mm-hmm. He's in space somewhere. All right. One more Requiem. What you got?
Okay. One more. So they dropped a trailer for the movie anime adaptation of a novel called Lonely Castle in the Mirror. And this trailer revealed that it is being, you know, produced by A1 Pictures and directed by Keiichi Hara, who did things like Colorful and Miss Hokusai, and is one of Doc Kev's favorite people.
Yeah, I was really excited because I had no idea what this director guy was doing next. So, I mean, earlier this year I reviewed a bunch of his films on the site, and so he seems to quite like adapting like novels, other people's work, but he does it really, really, really well. And this trailer looks nice. Looks like a fun kind of fantasy kind of thing. So I'm quite hyped. It's A1 Pictures, so it's going to look good anyway. Yeah. Hopefully it's not going to be produced by slaves.
Yeah. Apparently the original novel won the 2018 Japan Booksellers Award, won a bunch of other awards, and topped a magazine's Book of the Year list in 2017. So it's a critically acclaimed book, at least in Japan. So,
Hopefully this will get a cinema release in the West, like most of his other films have been.
Yeah, we're getting a lot more like the major releases over here now, so they'll probably at least get limited release.
I hope so.
Supposed to come out winter 2022. So,
nice. Yeah, I read Lonely Castle in the Mirror and I saw a picture of an island. I'm like, Lonely Island anime? But that's not what it is.
Oh, man. We need that.
I'd watch it. I want to see I'm on a boat in Japanese.
Yeah, throw it on the ground. Animated.
Ticket box. Anyways, let's move on to the topic of the week. This time, we're doing something a little
different. Don't forget. Hmm? The most important news
of the week. The detective is already dead. Season 2.
Season 2. They gave that piece of shit a season 2.
Did you watch the whole first season?
Oh, of course I did. It was great. Of course you did.
Where do you find the time? What do you do for a living? Do you just like watch this stuff in your cubicle and not do anything else?
I work for a logistics company. I'm actually really busy.
Oh, well, I don't know why you're wasting your sweet time on this.
It was gloriously trash. You know what I'm talking about? On the show, we're like, God, this is awful, but I'm really enjoying it.
Maybe that's why I got a second season.
Yeah, probably. It's so dumb. It's so dumb. And it kept upping itself with more and more dumb shit. Or she put her heart in somebody else's body, so like her personality is still there somewhere. And I'm like, what? What the fuck is how?
Weird.
How? It's so weird. And every time something really stupid happens, everyone just kind of rolls with it like it's normal. It's really bad, but I had a great time watching it. So I can't believe I got a season 2, but I'm absolutely here for it.
Nice. Well, good for Wreck and every other monster that wants to watch that.
Fucking Bakemono.
All right. So we've basically talked about literally everything on this podcast revolving around anime. So I thought, what if we just do a hard reboot or a soft reboot? I don't even know the difference anymore. So, and ask the Anite community, many of which have never come up on this podcast. So, yeah, we went to the Anite community. We asked them, who are the best and worst protagonists in anime? And we got a lot of different answers here. So I thought we would just go through these, maybe talk about a little bit, and then we'll give our own answers. Let's see what we got here. Oh, I got to find the thing again. Glad we have editors. There it is. And let's go here. Let's start from the top. There's this guy going by the name Licorice Wreck Oil. I'm not really sure who that is, but he couldn't give us a worst. Probably have to wait to find out. But he says, no, I'm sorry. The worst is Izuku Deku Midoriya. Are you guys familiar with this guy?
I don't know who that is, but he's obviously very smart because, yeah, Deku from My Hero Academia is the worst protagonist in the history of anime.
Okay. Now, hypothetically, if this was you, Rek, why would you say that?
Well, I mean, if this was me, which it clearly isn't, I would say because he's super fucking lame. He's like, it's a terrible show anyway, but he's so lame. He's so try hard. It's just the worst kind of like cloying, aggravating, super happy Naruto believe it kind of horseshit. And everything that I every time I watch the show, I rooted for him to die or lose or both.
He works so hard and he suffers for his goals and he loves his friends.
I'm so sick of his shit.
Oh, somebody shit? Broke Rek.
Eat some hair and get superpowers and I'm going to keep crying about it.
We talk about hair eating a lot. I remember that.
God, I just hate it. And I can't even completely, like, because there are other positive, you know, I'm going to do it with the power of belief kind of characters that I don't mind so much. But for some reason, it just, this guy bugs the shit out of me. I want to be a hero.
Remember that episode where they do, I want to be a hero. And they just do the running montage. Remember that episode of My Hero Academia?
Did it happen? I finally gave in and stopped watching like last season or season two seasons ago. I kept hoping he would get good. There are characters in the show I do like, but the problem is they never get enough time.
Okay. All right. Well, there are a lot of these, so we're going to move on. Ligo Lung Among Ding Dong. That's Luigi, by the way. He says, the worst is Senku from Dr. Stone. And I mean, that's a tough one for me because the thing that I like about Dr. Stone, you need a character like Senku. Yeah. But at the same time, he does kind of suck. So I don't know.
Yeah, he sucks.
Okay, there you go. Moving on.
I mean, you know, he's just a smarmy little like know-it-all. And you're right. Like the whole purpose of the show is you need someone who's like a scientific genius. Because you might know, if you came from our time period and you found yourself in this one, you might know more advanced things, but you don't know how to recreate them. You know, like if I got dropped into that time period, I couldn't recreate like fucking table salt or something. Like I don't know chemical formulas. So you need like a genius to kind of reboot the society. But does he have to be such an asshole?
They humanized him a bit in season two where like he actually, you know, missed his father figure and he like wasn't perfect at everything. So more of that, and I think Senku can become a better character. One thing that won't be fixed is the writing, which they try and be funny sometimes, and it never is. It's never funny. Most of the humor just falls flat for me. But I like the science, even if it is unbelievable. So
I'm going to recreate cell phones in this fucking, you know, Stone Age.
A radio tower. It's not a cell phone. T-Grip and Bunny S2 says, the worst character is that guy from Your Lie in April. Do we know who that is?
I think he means the main guy?
Don't know.
I think the protagonist topic would be referring to the main guy. You're right.
I didn't watch all of Your Lie in April, so I can't speak to it. I hated it.
Okay. Well, we actually go back to Luigi here for best character. He says Declan from Declan's Daring Dalliance.
I do love Declan's Daring Dalliance. Declan is a fantastic character, and he needs seasons 5, 6, and 7. That's a fake anime. I don't know if you're aware of that.
Okay.
He's making that up. That's a joke.
It sounds like a thing that I want to see all of a sudden. I'm like, why don't I know what this is?
I was like, wait a minute. Does he not know that's a joke?
I don't know.
That's a joke. That's Nomadic Dex Anime Life, season 1 coming out soon.
All right. Give me a link when we're done. Devil is Aurora says, wait, hold on a second. I don't think he actually gave us an answer. Okay, moving on. Let's see. Oh, here we go. Marquan of the Elite says, best protagonist, Eren from Attack on Titan. Worst protagonist, Eren from Attack on Titan.
That's fair.
That seems pretty fair. Depending on what season, that seems correct. When he's a little bitch or betraying all his... Well, he's not betraying his friends. He's just betraying humanity. Actually, I don't remember when he was really good. When was Eren really good?
I don't know. I never saw a part where he was good.
Yeah, he's usually kind of a bitch. I think towards, you know what, the end of the season before the final season, seemed like, oh, Eren's kind of redeemed himself. He's using his powers right. What a good boy. And then the latest season, I'm like, oh, son of a bitch. Gugsy Melon, Mask of Truth, says, I'm sorry, I should really read these answers before I say their names. I just wanted to say Gugsy Melon. Moving on. Again, glad we have editing. So, Deck is ex-family. Deck is a very well-spoken person. Sometimes says a lot of words. So we're going to do my best to get most of them here. Okabe Rintaro from Steins Gate. He says it's an obvious one because the whole series revolves around his yearning for knowledge, platonic and romantic love and despair, filtered through an all-time memorably eccentric and amusing personality. I agree. I also think Gon's consistently upbeat personality in the face of expanding horrors let Hunter Hunter, so Gon from Hunter Hunter, let transition through multiple tones without compromising his sensibilities. I think he is a good, as far as shonen protagonist, I think he's a good one. Let's see. We can talk about Shinji from Evangelion. I think a lot of people would say he's a bad protagonist, but
he's the worst protagonist.
He might be one of the worst. He does his job. Like he shows the horrible nature of the show of like a 14-year-old forced into this role of like, hey, you gotta protect humanity. Good luck, and just murder these like alien angel things. And he's just not that fun to watch, even if he's really selling the horrible nature of the situation.
Yeah, I mentioned it somewhere in that stream. Like Shinji's probably the worst protagonist, and Deck made the point that that's the point. That's what he's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, that's fair, I guess. In the context and purpose of the show, he's not supposed to be like a good protagonist, but it still doesn't make him watchable. Then again, my opinions on Evangelion are well known.
I forget, fan or not fan.
You know, I don't really like it that much. I try to keep it. I try not to bring it up very often, but yeah, I'm not a huge fan.
I always seem to forget for some reason. So yeah, that is the actual answer for best and worst protagonist. We got a bunch more, but I think just to be fair, we're going to keep going to the next person here. Alistair, time rendering says worst protagonist, Makoto Ito from School Days, because it is best example of how karma works if you manipulate people to get to meet a self-imposed standard based on nothing. Maybe we can even think of a way to make him suffer. We're not going to talk about that. And... yes, what do you guys think? I'm not familiar with this character.
No.
Are you serious?
Makoto Ito from School Days.
The main guy from School Days. Like,
have I seen School Days? Let me quickly check.
Trust me, like if you'd seen School Days, you'd remember it.
Maybe. I have bad memory.
You no, sure with the nice boat ending?
Nope, I haven't seen this one.
Wow, okay.
Do you agree or disagree with this statement?
I mean, yeah, he's a shitty protagonist, but once again, like that's kind of the point of at least of the adaptation.
Yeah.
It's like the whole point of School Days, the anime at least, is if you actually tried to date this many girls, you would eventually end very badly. And you know what? That's completely true. It is the actual natural end for any harem protagonist.
I think I could appreciate that.
But he's got a point, though. Like he's not a good person.
Yeah, I think the good discussion that could be had, not necessarily here, is slightly different, but is, you know, a good protagonist in terms of story structure who's still, say, a shitty person or whatever, you know.
Yeah, do they have to be a good person to be a good protagonist? And, you know, Breaking Bad and other shows would tell us, no. He can be a shitty person. It's just, does he drive the story well? And is he watchable? That's the thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't think I could agree in this case. I mean, that show is pretty watchable, even if it's deeply, deeply disturbed.
He's just a bad character, but like they do a good job portraying a bad character.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
So, right, don't hurt me, Chef Right Zeno says best is probably Gideon from Banished. Worst is Kier. Is that how you pronounce Kier from Redo?
Kiaru.
Kiaru?
He spelt it wrong.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Not Kiaru.
Anything and everything involved in Redo is the worst.
Is Redo the full worst. Title or Redo of something?
Redo of Healer.
Okay. Worst anime I have ever watched 2 episodes of and then vomited and stopped.
Hey, you got 2 in.
Pretty good. Never again.
Is the only anime to ever get Doc to hate it so much that he posted an entire article about how mad it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think of one of those.
Okay.
Yeah.
We didn't say anything about Gideon from Banish. You guys familiar?
I don't know that one.
Banish from the Heroes Party.
Okay.
Oh, no, shit! Banished I forgot
from the Heroes Party.
I forgot his name was Gideon.
Yeah.
Which one's Gideon? Is that Red or is that?
Yeah, it's Red. Red's real name is Gideon. I forgot about that. Yeah, he's actually
he's best. Yeah, he's pretty good. Yeah.
I don't know if best, but yeah, he was pretty great.
Yeah, the problems I had with that, I don't know if I've officially dropped it yet. I just sort of petered off and haven't gone back the last couple, three episodes. But yeah, he and the girl weren't the problem so much. It's just everything else going on about the show itself. So
let's see. Delicious Party, Arc Cure. I believe that's Arcane. Worst, yeah. The guy from Domestic Girlfriend.
Yeah. Once again, though, I think it's kind of the point.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of that, apparently.
That ending of that manga made me so angry.
Yeah, that's what I heard. A lot of people were enthralled with the ending of the manga.
So bad. I screamed. I read it and screamed like into a pillow. Well,
So
that makes me horribly curious as to what happened. But
it's pretty bad.
Yeah.
We're going to skip this guy because he didn't know he was going to be on the podcast. And we'll go right to Viking, who says, oh, wait, he's saying he agrees, the Domestic Girlfriend. But he's the worst. He seems pretty mild compared to the redo of Healer or whatever asshole. Yeah, it seems like that might be the case. Cool says, best Hachiman from Oregaru. What is the full title of that? You guys know? Is that the incest?
That's My Teen Romantic Comedy Snafu or My Youth Romantic Comedy As Wrong As I Expected, depending on.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's good. I agree with that. And worst main character from Kenja no Mago. Again, we don't know his name.
I don't know what that is.
I hate when... don't give me Japanese titles, people. I don't remember them.
I mean, not everyone knows how to use Google. It's, we want these people to communicate with us.
So oh, Wise Man's Grandchild. Yeah. But I mean, that show is so... shit.
Oh, well, okay.
It's just super generic... male power fantasy isekai. That the protagonist of that wasn't any worse than any of the other thousands of those.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, next up we got John. I'm just gonna say John. I think we know who that is. Best Guts from Berserk. Old school if you don't count 2016 anime. Look at the journey this guy takes from a character's point of view. This means more to manga readers. He starts off in the worst childhood imaginable, develops from a loner to a good guy who is sort of a family, loses everything in the worst way, lives through a literal hell, and always moves forward despite that to sort of regain a new family. Then his author died. So yeah, I guess we'll throw that in as part of Guts' story. And for worst, Shu from Guilty Crown, which I remember most of the characters sucking from that show.
Woo!
Terrible protagonist. The decisions he makes are terrible, and he gets off easy at the end. Yeah, I remember, isn't he, like, indirectly responsible for his friend dying?
He's indirectly responsible for a lot of bad shit. Yeah, but to be fair, like you just said, it's a terrible protagonist, but the show also has terrible antagonists and terrible deuteragonists, and everybody sucks, pretty much, yeah.
The best thing about Guilty Crown was the concept art and the music.
That's what sucks about Guilty Crown, right? Like, there's a lot of crappy anime, right? But you get an anime with those level of music and production values, and you just shit the bed.
Red Juice and Supercell. I was like, hell yeah. I was like, oh no, what is this? Yeah. But yeah, Guts is great. I don't know anybody who would say Guts is a terrible character. You could say that the anime and manga has some issues, but as a character, yeah, he's just a bad character, fun to root for.
The 90s anime and the animated movies of the Golden Age are great, and he comes off great in those. You know, he deserves better than that at CGI one.
I would like to think that if they make another season, they probably will, that it might be done by another team. Maybe Madhouse could come back, but I don't see that happening.
I want Berserk done by UFO Table.
That'd
be amazing.
That'd be good. They have this weird way of drawing non-simplified cute characters. Like when they draw like a dude with like a really thick jaw and like wrinkles in their face, it always looks kind of, I don't know, off-putting. So I don't know how they would handle the burly dudes, but they could probably pull it off. Their animation chops are obviously amazing, so I wouldn't mind seeing that.
Or Berserk by Trigger. I'd watch that too.
That'd be a very different show, probably. I am excited for Cyberpunk just because of the director, but otherwise I would not watch that anime.
No.
Next up, we got Kodayashi's Dragon Maid S, which he kept that nickname, huh? Best Protagonist, Hajime Ichinose from Gachaman Crowds. Smart, yeah. Beautiful, funny, caring, and overall fun. She is the very heart of the series. Without her, the show could probably still be really good, but she is what elevates the series into being a classic. Let's move on. Its worst protagonist was Inaho Kaizuka from Ald Noah Zero. Oh, yeah.
Oh, God. Man. Jesus Christ.
Actually, the opposite of Hajime in every way. One of the worst modern examples of a teenage mecha pilot just happens to be better than all the adult pilots. In this case, taking out basically Gundams with a goddamn training mech. And oh, man, the fucking R2-D2 eye implant he got in the second season. What do you guys think of these two choices?
Solid.
Solid.
Ald Noah Zero, I think, is... It's a steamy pile of shit. So
I love the soundtrack because I'm a swan.
Slain,
the soundtrack's so good. Yeah,
like I said, the antagonist, you know, Slain. It was so bad that we named the worst Anime of the Year awards after him. So
it's got such a stupid ending as well. I don't understand why I watched that entire thing to the end. But I was like, is that it?
Yeah. It also has a stupid beginning and a stupid middle.
Yes, it does. It does. Oh well.
And it was anime original, too, so they couldn't even blame the source material.
No.
But the writer of the anime. Blame them.
Good lord. What a terrible show.
Yeah. But Gatchaman Crowds was good. I quite liked that. I did think the main character was a bit annoying, but...
A little bit, yeah.
She was, like, practically perfect in every way. She was like the Mary Poppins of... anime protagonist doesn't get anything wrong ever, knows what the right thing to do in every single possible occasion, never makes a single mistake, and just is just unsettlingly smiley all of the time. But yeah, sure.
Basically, Senku.
It's not quite as obnoxious as him.
That's true. We gotta move on. Oh, people are starting to discuss things here. Let's see. Alistair, the time rendering best protagonist, Saitama of One Punch Man. His existential despair of solving everything with a single punch with no thrill is the kind of struggle I really dig, because it's not easy to keep fresh and interesting things around when your will has so little to do with the final result, and the minor things you are able to control are in need of love so bad that you need to constantly catch the spirit of the times to survive. That was a long sentence. His stoic take in life is inspiring, although he is a silly comedic character. He is proof that comedy shows insightful thoughts about the world in mysterious ways. Alistair also says mob self-growth is one of the greatest. I don't think he mentioned a worse protagonist. So, yeah.
God knows I'm not going to... I'm sitting here staring at a statue of Saitama. So, you're not going to get any argument out of me.
Yeah, I love One Punch Man and Mob Psycho, so I'm fully on board with these opinions. And I guess that's all the discussion there. Moving on. Yorikaze Deko, let me just see here. Wait, did I scroll? Okay, so agrees with Okabe Rintaro from Steins Gate. I think he also says... The only ones even in comparison, competition for me, is Lelouch from Code Geass or Takeru from Muv Love. Really? I don't know about that.
God. But... Obviously, he means the visual novels, because Takeru from the anime is lame.
The worst to me has to be someone who hindered a great show from the point in which I can't consider watching the show. For me, probably Kazuma from Rent-A-Girlfriend or Naofumi from Shield Hero. For his worst.
Yes, to both of those.
Yeah, I expected more people to say Naofumi.
I dropped Rent-A-Girlfriend after episode 2 because I'm just like, I want to like this show, but these are they're such horrible people. I can't stand them.
Alrighty. Let's see. Oh, we got one more from Ark. Says, contender for the worst teacher guy from Interviews with Monster Girls because he's a creep. I feel like I watched this and I don't remember it being that bad.
Yeah.
I sort of get it. I don't know that I agree, but it's certainly not contender for worst anyway. But
compared to what else we've seen so far.
Yeah.
Tenjigami Mew Mew New heart emoji says licked Bach from Plunderer for worst. Or for worst. Oh,
yeah, licked from Plunderer. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you're stereotypical sex pest protagonist. Kind of like the guy from crap. Seven Deadly Sins. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, he's putting his hands in his eyes where they're not supposed to be. And that show was really long too. It was way longer than I originally anticipated. So it gets really, really old after like 30 episodes.
He doesn't like develop as a character at all.
They go through an extended like time travel slash flashback arc that does develop him a little bit, but at that point, I think it's a little too late. Like, you're already kind of sick of the shit. Mm-hmm. Your mileage may vary.
Okay, so Ether gave Eve a lot of information, and I feel bad we're not going to be able to read all of this. Let me see how much we get here. So for Bess, he says, I'm going to take... First pick is Seth from Radiant, because while I love the majority of the main cast, the show's thesis wouldn't work as well without the human layer of vulnerability. Despite taking heavy influence from the big three of Shonen Jump, I'm curious what he says of the big three, I've taken to calling him the most humanized protagonist. He's not in it to prove himself, become stronger, or simply for the fun of it. Instead, choosing to rebel against a world that will not accept his kind and realize his own humanity in the process when given a choice. Like a sapling maturing into a tree, his roots only deepen with the story, the more involved he gets with the proverbial forest. Okay, so you guys, are you familiar with Radiant?
Yes. The fact that Ether picked Seth from Radiant is the least surprising thing that's ever happened. It's we like a sapling growing into an oak as the rivers find the sea.
So when does he turn to a tree? Season 3?
He's about halfway there. Yeah.
Okay.
Turns into a goat. I loved Radiant, and Seth is a great shonen protagonist. So yeah, it's a great shonen with a lot of heart, and it all mostly stems from him. So it's a very good choice. The big three, by the way, I'm pretty sure is One Piece, Naruto, and Bleach.
Bleach is the third?
I think.
I mean, I agree with the first two. I'm just like, what is the other one be? I mean, right now, I'd say My Hero Academia is their biggest, but if we're talking about all time.
Well, I think it's like their traditional big three. At least I think it is.
Okay. He also mentions worst. Unfortunately, we will not be reading all of his best choices. Let's see. My initial pick was going... Oh, I guess... Okay.
No, yeah. Okay. It's Naruto, Bleach, and One Piece. Yeah.
Okay. So my initial pick for worst was going to be Mirai from Platinum End. But then I realized that was a team effort of awfulness where everything just fell apart spectacularly from the material to the production. A failing grade is a failing grade, but that still requires showing up to class and taking all the exams. Now for the whole class to fail unanimously, that takes some serious effort. No, his pick is going to be... Oh, my God. The King of... Okay. I'm going to have to reword instructions for the next time we do this. No better candidate than 25th BAM from Tower of God. Now we'll read the description. The King of Midas of shit that single-handedly brought down its own show to its knees by simply breathing. A character so awful that not only failed upwards without having lifted a finger, they got put on honor roll from the comfort of their throne. I'm sorry, I can't read. To that end, I can't think of no better candidate. Yada, yada, yada. I'm so sorry, Ether. What do you guys think of this character?
The King Midas of shit.
Yeah, I agree. He's terrible. He's just an awful protagonist.
King Simp.
King Simp.
We're almost done. Oh, God. The show... It could have been good. That's what pisses me off about it. Like, it was good like 35-40% of the time. They're following the wrong character.
Yeah.
Who should they have been following?
The blue-haired kid with the bag. Like, that kid was a lot... That kid was a protagonist.
Yeah, he's cooler. Are we going to get another season of this? I wouldn't mind them continuing it. I didn't hate it.
Almost certainly.
It seemed like it was popular at the time. At least Crunchyroll was making me assume that.
God knows they were working on it. I'll tell you that. They were doing their best to promote that shit. I mean, it was better than God of High School, although that's a remarkably low bar.
I mean, I think we talked about before, God of High School is like, so the fights are so good, but everything else is just like,
eh. Although, at the end, I admit I was pretty entertained by the end where like he turned into Goku and stabbed God.
It completely went off the rails. Yeah, that was pretty good.
It went off the rails and then blew up the theme park.
Yeah, exactly. All right, we got a couple more here. Ark. Oh, you know what? Ark didn't say a worse earlier. Well, here we go. Koichi, is that the name? Koichi from Another?
Yeah, I can see that.
Because I remember watching Another. That's the horror one.
So, yeah, I just remember Another for the umbrella.
Yeah, I don't remember a whole lot other than the girl getting trapped in the elevator and dying, but there were a lot of weird deaths in that anime. Let's see what they had to say. In a mystery story, you would hope that the protagonist would accomplish something, literally anything in the story. Koichi just straight up does nothing. He solves nothing on his own and has the entire plot explained to him, and his participation is part of the reason why the twist at the end of the story is one of the absolute dumbest in any anime. In a story where every character is bad at their jobs, he fails entirely in his duty as a protagonist and could be replaced by a cardboard cutout of himself with little impact on the plot. Sound about right? Do you guys agree?
Yeah, it's fair.
Okay, there you go. And I think he said best, but I could have sworn he gave us a best earlier. It might be Ai-chan from Baby Steps.
Didn't watch that one.
No. Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't think any of us watched it, but let's see. Baby Steps is commonly referred to as Thinking Man's sports show, and that's Thinking Man is I assume that's how it's pronounced. In a field of heroes that tap into strange and occasionally literally supernatural powers, we see Ai completely believably use his power of analysis to grow as a tennis player, despite his completely average physical ability, in addition to being part of one of the best anime romance stories of the last decade by being a genuinely kind person. We will stop there. So, yeah, sounds like, interesting. I haven't watched any tennis anime. I watched a decent amount of sports anime, though. And we have one left here. And nope, that is a question. That's it. So let's go to our own personal picks. I want to hear from you, Omar guy, because he actually gave one and I skipped it because he didn't know he was going to be on the podcast. What do you think? Best and worst protagonist?
Yeah, I'm actually going to start with the worst. Just recapping, I did say Naofumi from Shield Hero. As I mentioned in the thing, you know, that there's to a certain degree, you kind of have the idea of Ark really, I think props to him for nailing the idea of what really makes the worst protagonist to somebody who completely fails story-wise. So to a certain degree, I wasn't going to pick on crap shows, but you know, Naofumi is just, you know, he's a terrible person. Really. There's been reams and hours of things written about everything wrong with Shield Hero and stuff, so I'm not going to jump into the recap. I agree with a couple of those picks that, as I've mentioned, but for my best though, I'm going to jump into, in terms of stuff I've seen, certainly high contender is, I'm going to roll old school with Spike Spiegel from Cowboy Bebop. Jack kind of spelled out way back when he was talking about, you know, his requirements, as it were, for best, about, you know, to quote Deck, he said, his feeling is the best true protagonist is the character from whom all else flows. And yeah, I think that's Spike, where, you know, whether they're doing just, you know, the mundane day-to-day junk of trying to make enough money to survive, to, you know, the whole final confrontation with his past at the end that wraps up the story, that's the main driver. Is everybody else, you know, their stories kind of flow into him. You know, his story is the big river. You know, everybody flows in and, you know, in a lot of cases flows away eventually. But you know, Spike's story is Cowboy Bebop. And I think he, you know, they nailed that in terms of living up to it and keeping us in there for it.
I mean, it's pretty much the perfect anime, and part of it is because the main protagonist is so good. So yeah, I totally agree. Okay, I think, Dr. K, are you asleep? What's up?
No, I'm still here.
Hello?
Yeah.
You can just say whatever you want. I just like hearing your voice. Go ahead.
Thanks. So, best protagonist. I mean, one of my very favorite anime of all time is Steins Gate. And although the main character, Rintaro Okabe, can be really, really annoying at times, I really like how he works so hard for his spoilers eventual happy ending through, and including Steins Gate Zero, I suppose, as well. This guy suffers so much for his poor choices and has to basically rewind time multiple times to reverse all of his decisions to try and save the lives of the woman he loves and his best friend. It's just, it's so tragic, and he's broken into bits and just about goes insane from just misery, but he still manages to succeed, and I love his character arc. I think it's amazing. And in terms of the worst, I would have picked the guy from Domestic Girlfriend, but he's been mentioned already. So for a similar show, Rent-A-Girlfriend, Kazuya, the main character, he's just awful. I don't understand why any of the women have any interest in him. He's just, he's hateful and shallow and just really horny, but in a bad way. And he's indecisive and pathetic. I hate him. I don't know why I'm still watching this show.
I appreciate that you openly admit that being horny is a good thing by default.
He's horny in a bad way.
Yeah,
he's a terrible character. It's like a, yeah, I totally agree. I'm not watching the show because he's such a terrible character.
Well, I don't know. I already feel like I've started, so I'll finish. I'm sure this has something to do with Requiem infecting me with his, the way he watches anime. Don't drop anything.
Damn it! You signed up for it. You muddle through. Damn it.
Yeah.
It kills me because I like so many of the people in the voice cast.
Mm-hmm.
Sora, Amamiya, Aoyuki, I don't remember who all else, but God, they're just so terrible. I'm like, I can't, it's no enjoyment from the show. Do not want to watch.
Just, it would be such a better show if he just died and all of the girls could just be each other's girlfriends or something.
Yeah.
That would be great. I'd watch that.
It'd be so much better if he just died.
Yeah. Yeah.
If he's about 20% less terrible, he'd probably be fine.
Yeah, well, I mean, there'd be probably quite a lot of anime out there that would be pretty good if the protagonist just died and the rest of the characters just got on with it without them.
Well, there we go. That'll be one of our next podcast topics.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. What's the best show if the main protagonist died?
Yeah. Maybe a little bit of crossover with this topic, but yeah.
All right. You spread it out a little more.
Yeah.
Well, really, that question is, which show has the best supporting cast?
Hmm.
All right. I think both of my choices are going to upset Requiem, so I'm very much looking forward to his responses. I could easily talk about like all the badass cool characters. I could talk about almost anything with the director of Hideyuki Imaishi, Kill la Kill, or Gurren Lagann, but I think when I was thinking about it, characters that kind of like drive the show and are just like so well done, I'm just always surprised, is Kumiko from Sound Euphonium. I think is just an extremely well done character. I would actually say Kyo Annie does a great job with her protagonists. I could even say Violet Evergarden. I love her progression as a character, but I have to go with Kumiko because she's in a show that otherwise just seems like a boring show, and it is not a boring show about a school band, but she acts totally differently with all different people. She's very believable as like a teenage girl, other than the very close friendship she has with her friend that never turns into anything. I think her as a character, though, she's fun to watch, and I just love seeing her grow very subtly as a character. She doesn't just like go from one person to another person like a lot of media handles their main characters. No, she naturally grows subtly, and I just think she's just awesome and carries the show.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Never seen that show.
You've never seen Sound Euphonium? Oh, I thought you would have seen it.
Don't watch it. It's terrible.
I think I might have the Blu-ray. I will get around to it eventually.
You should. Everything that I recommend to you, you love. Just keep that in mind.
Okay.
Oh, that was easy. Okay. As far as characters I don't like, I don't usually stick with shows when I don't like the main characters. I kind of need a good main character, which is why I drop ReZero, because I hate Natsuki Subaru a lot.
Oh my god.
I realized
the longest thing I've ever heard.
I realized how much I didn't like him when he had the flashback episode with his family. I'm like, I should really be liking this, and I kind of liked it, and it kind of gave him some, I don't know, something to his character, but I just really hated the way he was trying to make jokes and laugh off situations. Like, I know, yeah, you died a few times, whatever. And it's just like everything surrounding him just so tropey and annoying that I don't like him. I guess everybody agrees we can move on.
You're wrong.
Oh, you're so wrong. The wrongest wrong that's ever wronged.
Yeah.
The overwhelmingness of the wrong is staggering.
I get one specific. One reason why this guy's good.
What are you talking about? He's fantastic.
Why?
Like, he suffers immeasurably and always manages to go forward. He suffers realistically. Like, he's not overpowered like a lot of other protagonists in fantasy and isekai. You know, he is only, like, he has flaws to which he struggles and overcomes. You know, he's a really aspirational character in that way. It's like, he's a normal person, you know, thrown into a situation with no knowledge. And with the only thing he's got is ability to not die. But every time he dies, like, it's like he forgets that he died. He can't forget the pain, you know, and he struggles through. It's like a metaphor for life itself.
He's a lot like Okabe from Steins Gate in a way, because he's going through sort of this repetitive time loop thing where everything that does go wrong can go wrong, and he suffers and he remembers everything, but he still tries really, really hard and never gives up. So I like that about him.
He improves as the show goes, which is,
yeah.
A lot of characters don't.
He makes mistakes. He learns from them. You know, those mistakes often end with him being beheaded or vivisected or set on fire or disemboweled or, you know, one of these things. So, you know,
as you do.
Yeah.
These are learning experiences that we could all learn from, I suppose.
We can all learn from a good disemboweling. All right, let's see. I have not... Requiem, we haven't heard from you yet.
Well, I mean, we've heard from me a lot, but...
We've heard from you a little too much, let's be honest.
Yeah. So, like, we already mentioned the guy from Redo of Healer, because, and you know, my opinions on Shinji Ikari are well-known. But the worst protagonist of any anime was obviously Toru Honda from Fruits Basket.
No. What? No,
I just did that to give Luigi a heart attack.
I reacted for him. There you go.
No, so I'm going to go for worst. I'm going to go with a show that most people haven't seen. It's called Nobari no O. It's a ninja anime. I love ninjas. I think this is known. I love ninja anime. Stuff like, you know, Basilisk and things of that nature.
What is that boys love one?
Yeah, that one was great too. And then Flame of Rekka, stuff like that. And this show should have been good. And the problem is, like, every other character in the show is decent to good and interesting. And it should have been this great ninja battle show. And the main character is a guy named Muharu, and he sucks so bad that he drains the show of any life or excitement and drives it into the ground. It takes a show that could have been a 7 or an 8 and makes it a 4 because he's just so fucking lame. Yeah, he's supposed to be like, you know, a kind of nonchalant, you know, sad, gloomy protagonist. But the problem is, like, you can do that in a way that works. This didn't work. It's just like he sucks. He sucks the life out of every scene he's in. Like, every time something cool is about to happen, he comes in and Eeyores his way through it. And he's like,
Eeyore is a verb. I like it.
Yeah, Eeyore is a verb. Eeyore's his way through the show, and he murders it. And it pissed me off, because I should have gotten a cool battle ninja show. Instead, I got the adventures of Sad Boy the Ninja. So, when we brought this topic up, it was the first thing that came to my mind. And that is saying something, considering the 10,000 anime I've seen. How much I hate that little fucker.
All right, so don't watch that.
No, don't watch it. No, I can't recommend it. But that's the problem. I should have been able to recommend it. Anyways, that's like I saw. Oh God, it's making me mad just thinking about it. Every
single. What's your favorite then?
My favorite is so hard. This topic is. There's so many great ones. Gene Starwin from Outlaw Star, Lena Inverse. For those of you my mid '90s kids, what's up, Slayers? Mm-hmm. I think my favorite protagonist, though, like, because you say best, which really just means his favorite. So,
I mean, there's two answers, yeah. Objectively best and personal favorite, yeah.
Well, there's no such thing as objectively best. For me, it's Vash the Stampede from Trigun. I fucking love that guy. That guy, you know, he made that ridiculous story work. You know, he managed to be like balancing a character who outwardly acts goofy and inwardly has been horribly traumatized and struggles to overcome it. Like, you know, it's just like Subaru from ReZero, but with like a much better attitude. And when it comes down to time to kick ass, he can do that too. So to me, he's the ultimate anime protagonist.
We didn't really get a character like that in anime or really any media before, where it was like, oh, this character is so powerful. Usually you expect him to be, well, in the 90s, you'd expect him to be stoic and like showing that they can just do whatever they want. But he was just like a goofball. And every now and then he just flipped a switch and like, oh, it's serious business time. We get that a lot nowadays. But back then, I don't think anyone was really doing that.
No, you expect badasses to be more like Guts from Berserk, or like a really cool character like Cowboy Bebop, like, you know, with spikes. Oh, he's so cool. Isn't he cool? Look how cool he is, the show screams at you. And Vash isn't really cool, but he's not trying to be either. He's just trying to be himself. And he's just trying to get through life without hurting people. And he can't seem to avoid it. And he can be funny, but he's also really sad when it needs to be.
The man just wants a donut, all right?
That's all he wants. The man just wants a donut and love and peace. That's what he wants. That's
not too much to ask for.
And instead, occasionally, he blows up a city.
It wasn't his fault.
I mean, it's debatable.
Well, that was our first episode of Ask Anite. We'll see if people like it. Maybe we can try it again. I think that's about it. Is there anything else you guys want to say before we wrap it up?
Golf spelled backwards is flog.
Good night, everybody. You can just definitely cut it after good night, everybody. I was going to say thanks, blah, 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 but no, you don't need to do that.